Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with David Patton, the CEO of Patton Enterprises and a former corporate executive with Harrah's or Caesars and Rush Street Gaming, to discuss how his company uses data to drive revenue and customer service. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by Questback, the smart choice for the gaming industry's workforce requirements. In an era of rampant corporate misconduct, organizations need to leverage their most valuable asset, their people. Questback specializes in fostering that dialogue, delivering invaluable insight to organizations around the world on the most challenging governance, risk, and compliance initiatives. Whether it's internal misconduct reporting and workplace response or organizational cultural development and leadership assessments, Questback delivers the invaluable insight that drives exceptional organizations. To learn more, visit questback.com. The casino industry is inundated with data. The casino industry is inundated with data, but the individual companies and casinos often don't know how to use it. Former casino executive David Patton is using his experience and knowledge of gaming to help executives understand how to parse the data and use it effectively in evaluating the customer experience. Patton is a graduate of Harvard University and Harvard Law School. He worked at the upper-level management with then-Harrah's Entertainment and later Neil Bloom's Rush Street Gaming. He believes data analytics holds the key to creating loyalty and improved service with customers in the casino industry. He spoke with me at our offices in Las Vegas in September. David Patton, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's good to get together with you. I knew you in some of your previous lives in other casino companies, but now you're out on your own. So why don't you just start off with giving us a thumbnail of what your background is, so our listeners will realize that you speak from a position of experience.
Thank you, Roger. It's good to be with you again. Good morning. And the last time we spoke actually was in 2009, mm-hmm. when I just started as the President and Chief Operating Officer for Rush Street Gaming.
Right.
So let me take you back a little bit. I've been in the gaming industry now for 17 years. Mm-hmm. Started after having a career as a lawyer and a management consultant, also an entrepreneur, with Harrah's Entertainment.
Right.
My first job with them was the Director of Slot Revenue Management, mm-hmm. Working in the corporate office. Eventually branched out, got onto the operations side, ran our property in East Chicago, Indiana. Mm-hmm. When we sold that as part of the Caesars purchase, moved back to Las Vegas, managed the Rio for a couple of years, okay. The Flamingo, mm-hmm. and then finished up at the corporate office with Harrah's, and shortly after the LBO, decided to move to maybe smaller pastures, but where I could have a larger say in the culture.
Sure, right.
And spent 6.5 years with Rush Street Gaming, mm-hmm. with Neil Bloom. We built that company, opened 4 casinos in a very, very short period of time.
Right.
And then for the last couple of years, have been doing a mix of private equity work, development and redevelopment opportunities, data analytics, and then mm-hmm. also some casino management projects.
Okay, great. Well, there's certainly a lot of experience and a lot of expertise there, so we're grateful that you sat down with us today. But one of the reasons we did is we're publishing an article that you wrote in our October issue about data analytics, and it's a subject that, you know, has been around for quite some time. Ever since the first Players Club was established, casino operators have been excited about the data that they can get from those clubs. But it doesn't seem like we've fully taken advantage of that even to this day. Why is that?
Well, data has been a friend,
right.
To the casino industry. There's no question about it. What I have found, especially when we look at how data has transformed so many other aspects of business, not just in America but in the world, in the casino business, we are still, I believe, in the early phases, mm-hmm. of really leveraging the data.
Right.
You know, we have lots of reporting that we do, and this is where I draw the distinction. And I used to say this all the time in my prior job. Is people would talk about doing an analysis of something, and then they would hand you pieces of paper with numbers on,
sure.
them. And I say, well, this isn't analysis, this is reporting.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of reporting where we'll look to see how our promotion did.
Right.
We will look at the different customer segments. We'll look at profit margins and then say, well, if we have a good number, let's
right.
do more of that. And a
right.
number that's not so good, we'll do less of that.
Right.
So to me, there's two issues. One is the approach that we're taking, mm-hmm. and I think when you're trying to really get your data to work for you to make your business better, because that's ultimately the goal,
sure.
is the first thing you have to do is understand what questions are you trying to answer, mm-hmm. and a lot of times we don't take the time to do that.
Right.
So, you know, what am I really looking to do? Am I trying to get more play from, you know, this particular customer segment? Am I trying to improve my profit margins on this? Am I trying to reduce my costs here? Am I trying to drive revenue? So what are the questions we're trying to answer? And then the second thing we need to plot out is, what am I going to do differently as a result of what I learn? And if I can't say that with some specificity, and if I don't know how it's going to change my business practices, mm-hmm. then don't bother. Don't waste your time, because there's a lot of questions that we can answer that aren't worth really asking.
Right.
And then the last thing, though, and that is, this is where I think the key is the data that we have, we need to slice it thinner, frankly.
Right.
So looking at the standard customer segments that we typically look at, age-based, worth-based, frequency-based, is helpful, mm-hmm. but it only gets us half the way there.
Right.
And so to really look at the data in far more thin slices, more discrete ways, that is... that's where you really start to see patterns emerge. That's mm-hmm. how you can start making better predictions about what customers are going to do.
Right.
And then you can also start to see that the segments that we currently look at often, while they're helpful in terms of reporting, they don't really tell us what how a lot of customers may look very different but act very similarly.
Yeah.
Or they may act very different but look very similarly. And that's where we can really start to make some hay, frankly.
Great. I think the bottom line is always you want to give your customers what they want. It doesn't matter what level they are. But do the customers really know what they want? I mean, you know, from your article, it seems like they're not really sure themselves.
Well, everybody thinks they know what they want.
Right.
And you know, the example that you point to has to do with time on device. And I know we'll probably get to that in a little bit. And I think the key is we have to always respect our customers, number
sure.
one.
Right.
And I do think customers know what they want. The fundamental thing that everybody wants is they want to have fun. They want to have entertainment. They want to feel like they're getting value for their dollar. Those are all things they want. They want attention. They want to feel like they're being valued and mm-hmm. treated with respect.
Sure.
So to that point, there are things we do on the customer service side, mm-hmm. there are things we're going to do on the marketing side, and there's things we're going to do on the operational side
right.
to address that. And I don't think we ever want to be in a position where we're telling a customer, well, you don't really know what you want.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to be able to do is provide what the customer wants in terms of a great experience,
right.
but maybe a little bit ultimately, at least from a product standpoint, there may be products that are more suited to customers' needs
mm-hmm.
that the customer doesn't necessarily understand, but we can help bridge that gap
mm-hmm.
if we educate our employees.
Okay.
And then the customers, once they start playing the right games,
right.
they'll understand it and they'll have a better experience. And then that's how you drive higher visitation, higher spend,
okay.
and more loyalty.
Sure. I understand. So we casino operators are using a lot of metrics to measure their success. And one of the metrics they use is a win per unit per day, what a slot machine wins in a 24-hour period. You point out that this might not be the best metric to use in the article. How do you come to that conclusion?
Well, win per unit per day is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I would never say we should throw out win
right,
per unit per day.
Not, right.
But the problem is when we use win per unit per day as the primary way to justify a game's presence on the floor, we're missing opportunities. And
mm-hmm.
let me explain. Let's take the most extreme example. Let's say Wheel of Fortune is your best game on the floor,
right.
highest win per unit per day. No one would ever suggest that you put only Wheel of Fortune games on the floor,
right.
even if you could buy them. So forget
sure.
the fees for a minute. No one would ever say, well, let's just take the best game and let's put 2,000 of them on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that that's not the right answer.
Right.
Okay. So what is the right answer? Well, what we get caught up in when we only look at win per unit per day is it's very easy to take poorly performing games off the floor
mm-hmm.
and replace them with a new game.
Right.
And the new games are almost always going to do better and
mm-hmm.
think that somehow we have, you know, we can declare victory
right.
because of that. What we really need to look at is stop looking at the machines and stop looking at their numbers and let's look at the customers and start to understand, okay, the customers that are coming X number of times a week and spending X number of dollars, if they were playing these games before that no longer are there,
mm-hmm.
what are they doing now?
Right.
Have we changed their behavior? Have we made their experience better by introducing these new games?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, because so many games are directed toward the typical slot customer, which
mm-hmm.
we say is typically a female, typically 45 to 65 years
mm-hmm.
old, there are enormous segments of our customers that aren't really being addressed by many of the games that are being produced.
Right.
So it's a disconnect both on the manufacturer side and on the operator side. So I would love to talk to a slot director who's willing to take a chance on a game that'll do half of house average, but it's really, really a great game for, say, male 21 to 34-year-old customers that will bring them back to the casino more and more, drive their loyalty, help you pick up additional profit from that segment. Yet at the same time, as long as we keep enough product for our, you know, typical slot customer, that's how we win. We don't need 2,000 games in a 2,000 slot casino for 58-year-old women, frankly, right? But we pretty much have that now.
Right.
And what we don't have is enough product for some of the younger segments and some of the segments that desire a different experience from a volatility standpoint, et cetera.
You make a really interesting comparison between the way we design slot machines today and the way major TV networks design their content. They try to hit this big mass in the middle, and they end up with bland content. So what can casinos do to liven up their slot floor if manufacturers are determining what game they'll produce the same way all the time?
Well, I think there's two things. One is first of all, I would never take the status quo as a given. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we need to work on is the relationship with the manufacturers.
Right.
And the fact that we see, as operators, see manufacturers as competitors of theirs is a problem.
Right.
To some extent, there is that competition, particularly when it comes to online casinos, and that's a whole separate issue we could have another podcast about.
Right.
But the industry would benefit tremendously if there was more data sharing than there is today.
Mm-hmm.
Because the slot manufacturers, I imagine, if Facebook didn't know how people use Facebook, what kind of product would it be?
Mm-hmm.
But that's how slot manufacturers are operating right now. They have no idea how people actually play their games.
Right.
They get some very, very high level win per unit or rankings from the operators, but they really don't know what that customer experience is on the game. If they had that information, they could design better products and the whole industry would win.
Right.
So that's one, I think. So a better cooperation environment between operators and manufacturers, I think, is critical. The second is, setting that aside, what can you do for your customers to improve their experience, assuming that the games don't change? Well, part of it is how you merchandise them.
Mm-hmm.
Better signage, better zones of engagement where customers actually know what kind of experiences they're likely to get if they go to this zone. So maybe you have a zone of, you know, the progressive zones for people that really, really, really want to hit a meaningful jackpot and you put them all together. Or maybe you have a high volatility zone. Maybe you have a zone for newer customers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have to integrate that with educating the team members so that they know how to help customers find the games that they want. So there's education of team members. There's zoning. And then throughout all of this, particularly when we're talking about the higher worth customers, is making sure we get to know the customers better, build that relationship, and take notes,
right?
Put that in, especially for the high, we obviously can't do this for every customer, but for the higher worth customers, put it in their file and start to analyze their experiences on different trips to see what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, did this customer suddenly leave the casino because of an experience on a game? How can we make sure that doesn't happen again?
Right.
Or if they stayed longer, go back to the ratings that they actually experienced on the game and start to look to see what the patterns are. And then we'll be able to address their needs a lot better.
Right.
And maybe they're playing games that aren't suited for them.
Mm-hmm.
But once we can understand that, we can help guide them, you know, move them over. Maybe give them an offer for a particular game so that they're not taking the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And if they really like it, then they'll start coming back.
Yeah.
And everybody's better for that.
Sure. Right. Right. So you know, this zone thing I think is interesting, especially having been in Atlantic City this summer and seeing the two new casinos open there, and they don't have the long rows of slot machines anymore. It's really just groups of slot machines in certain areas. Is this something you think that can be improved? And I'm not sure if they zone them the same way you just described in terms of, you know, high volatility and you know, regular slot machines, that kind of thing. Is this something that they could do more of, and if they really pay attention to it?
I absolutely think that they could be doing more of that. I was just in Atlantic City a week and a half ago and walked the new floors. Well, I actually walked the entire boardwalk, but one thing that did strike me, particularly about the Ocean Casino, was the lack of signage and the lack of zones.
Right.
So, especially in markets where you have inexperienced customers that aren't necessarily sure what they want, I think you know, Atlantic City, obviously Las Vegas falls into that,
right?
Particularly, those are two markets where you really want to be able to signpost for people,
right?
Where they're going, and I don't think we do enough of that. Mm-hmm. I do appreciate that over the years, slot operators, casino operators, and we did this back in the day at Harrah's too, have done a good job of breaking up those long banks of slots, right, and creating, you know, more comfort zones for people, more end caps, mm-hmm, carousels, things like that. So that's sort of how they're laying out the living room. But then the issue then is, okay, so but what is the furniture in there? Is it really comfortable?
Right.
Does it really suit the needs of the customers? And in order to do that, you need to have an understanding, mm-hmm, of what these games really mean for the customers. What are the experiences of these games? And this gets to volatility, mm-hmm, a little bit, and time on device. And what I don't see is that we as operators have really taken our data, getting back to your initial question, to really understand what these games do to and for, mm-hmm, customers. And in order to do that, you need to slice the data more thin. You need to have people who really understand analytics. We need to hire more people that are more analytically focused, mm-hmm, and or seek help from people who are analytically, right, focused, who can advise you on what those strategies can be. And I think there's tremendous upside for most of our operators out there to do that.
Okay, great. So you touched on customer service and developing relationships with customers. A couple of years ago, John Akers told me to go down to the Barona Casino in California, and he said, go as a customer, don't go as a reporter, you know, which I did. I checked into the hotel and got my little card, and he was telling me that the system they have there is so interpersonal with their employees that it's really special, and he was right. I mean, they were very much touched the customer as you walked in at every touch point. For example, they don't have the kiosk where you can put your ticket in and walk away. You have to go to the booth, and then they engage you there. And so is this something that we need to do more in the industry, or is more technology where you can order a drink right at your machine on the service pad? Is that a trend of the future?
I'm not sure that we can turn back the clock. Mm-hmm. I love the Barona Casino. I spent most of my winter avoiding Chicago and
right,
spending it in San Diego working for the Jamul tribe, mm-hmm, on a project. But I spent a fair amount of time at Barona,
yeah,
and it is a completely different experience,
sure,
than any other casino.
Yeah.
And I love what they've done there. Part of what they do bakes a higher level of labor, mm-hmm, cost,
yeah,
and other costs,
no question,
into the,
yeah,
business, and,
yeah,
they're fine with that.
Yeah.
So the question for the larger casino companies, and, mm-hmm, we're getting more and more larger companies and fewer smaller companies, is, are you really willing to do that?
Right.
My guess is they're not.
Right.
So the question is, given that technology has taken us to a certain level, mm-hmm, and it's probably not going to go backwards,
right,
and quite the opposite, it'll probably continue to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do within that universe of technology? And I believe customers appreciate technology as long as they don't lose that opportunity for personal interaction.
Sure.
So we've seen, if you go to airports now, a lot of the large airports, you sit down at a restaurant, you're going to order from an iPad,
mm-hmm,
and there's a server there to help you if you have questions.
Right.
And they will bring the food to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we may have robots bringing the food to the table.
Right.
but that has been a boon to customers because they can order on their time now. So they may miss part of the interaction, but there is, and just charging it is easier. They can redeem points now instead of having to pay if they have points. So there are, I think, a lot of positives. I think the key, though, is every customer wants to feel like their needs are being taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have a question or if they have an issue, we're there right away to,
sure,
help them with that.
Right.
So you always have to have the human backup to, right, any technological solution.
Right.
And if the answer is, well, you know, put in a help desk ticket,
right,
or press this button and we'll, right, get to you, then you're failing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right,
and as the technology improves, then there's less need for backup.
Right.
But I don't think we're going back at all on technology.
No.
Barona is a very interesting and pleasant exception to the,
sure,
rule,
right,
but I can't see that driving where the industry ultimately,
right,
goes.
Right. And also, I mean, the employees have relationships with the players, and they know you know how many kids they have, and they ask them personal questions when they come in, and it's just a comfortable relationship. I don't know if a big casino could do that in the way they do it there.
Well, Barona's also in a different environment, and they're not a publicly traded company,
right,
with,
yes,
a board of directors,
right,
and institutional shareholders,
mm-hmm,
who,
right,
are going to be looking at next quarter's earnings and,
yeah,
wondering,
sure,
you know, why,
right,
why did the other guys improve by 20% and you're,
right,
only up 12%.
Talk about the sponsor for this episode, Questback works with clients around the world, including one-third of the Forbes list. Questback powers transformative organizations through the power of feedback-driven insights. Sexual harassment, whistleblowing, gender pay discrimination, conflicts of interest, corruption. In an era of rampant corporate misconduct and heightened public scrutiny, organizations must leverage their most valuable asset, their people. When do they see that on a daily basis? What are issues or risks in the front lines? Do your employees understand corporate policies? What are your organizational risks on the ground floor? Questback specializes in fostering that dialogue. Visit their website at questback.com to learn more about Questback's solutions for internal misconduct reporting, whistleblowing, governance, and compliance initiatives.
So you touched on time and device, I think, and that's what a lot of players say they want. But at the same time, they like the volatile machines and things like that, which are kind of the enemy of time on device. How should operators approach that dilemma?
Well, I don't see volatility as the enemy of time on device necessarily. Mm-hmm. What volatility does is it introduces more variability. Mm-hmm. Now, customers have... they are the ones who can determine time on device. So there's a couple of ways you can increase your time on device if you just had a bad session. Right. So high volatility games absolutely increase the risk that you're going to lose X amount of dollars more quickly than if you're playing a low volatility device. What we found over the long run, and we found this, I've seen this in literally every casino that I've been to, that I've managed or been a part of, is that over time, customers migrate to higher volatility mm-hmm. games. When we opened our facility in Pittsburgh, there were a lot of people who had very little casino experience. Mm-hmm. And the low volatility games did much better than the high volatility games. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, it was completely flipped. And we saw that in every other jurisdiction. Customers are the ones who determine their time on device.
Right.
If you have a budget of $100, you can increase your time on device by lowering your bet. Mm-hmm. You can increase your time on device by going to the ATM machine potentially, right? Or maybe, you know, you go with $100, but you only decide to spend $50 for now, and if mm-hmm. you lose it, then you'll spend the other $50. But we know from experience that customers' wallets are a lot more variable than what we think. A $100 customer typically can spend up to 3 to 4 times that on a trip.
Sure.
A $1,000 customer, you know, may even have more variability. So they are going to be willing, under the circumstances, whether it's having a great experience or maybe they just don't want to leave after 30 minutes if they had a bad experience, to adjust their wallet. So they can spend more, they can reduce their bet or increase their bet if things are going well. The question is, what will cause them to want to spend more time in the casino? Mm-hmm. And what ultimately customers want is they want that thrill. They want that excitement. Right. They want that real possibility that they can have a win that they're going to remember. Mm-hmm. And the problem with the low volatility games is they don't provide enough of that.
Right.
So a lot of manufacturers, I won't say a lot, but I know specifically of a couple of manufacturers who really felt like they wanted to produce games that weren't going to create that risk of quick loss for customers as much, and created entire product lines of games that were designed to increase time on device. And while that might have worked for a little while, over time the customers decided, no, I want less time on device. And I've studied this at both Harrah's and at Rush Street, and we saw very, very clear correlations between time on device and volatility. And so I push back when you say that volatility is the enemy of time on device. Frankly, the highest time on device games are typically the highest volatility games because it's the customer that controls that.
Right.
And they do have ways to make sure that they can, you know, keep on the game.
Right.
And they exercise that over time. And they vote with their feet. They will walk away from games that don't give them a good experience. It's like riding a roller coaster that doesn't go up, right? Who wants to ride that? Who wants to ride the Cornfield Express, right? They want to go to Everest and come back down. And that's really the experience that that customers that when I say customers, we're speaking very broadly, but a very, very significant chunk of customers really, really want. They want to have that thrill, that anticipation that something big can actually happen and that it actually has happened for them in the past.
Okay, great. So we've got this cascade of data still coming through players clubs, surveys and focus groups and things of that nature. How can casinos like wade through all this data to really come up with action plans that succeed?
Well, I think what you have to do is you have to be disciplined about, this goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier. What are the questions that you're trying to answer? You know, what's really important? Let's prioritize because there are literally thousands of of inquiries that we could make. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting when I spent some time with data scientists who have been on the leading edge of changing many business practices out there. Many industries have used data science to their benefit. The casino industry basically doesn't use it at all.
Right.
I know there are some large companies that have employed data scientists, and they've been of some use in, mm-hmm. in some areas, but we really haven't harnessed it. One of the issues is there's usually a disconnect between the business side and the analytics side. The people doing the analytics are very smart people, often with PhDs,
right.
but they have never walked a casino floor and been responsible for customers.
Right.
So they really don't know the questions. They find a lot of inquiries that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the business side, you have people who understand the business really well, but they don't really understand what those
right.
What those folks are doing off in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's critical, one, to understand what are my priorities, what are the questions I'm trying to answer, and then where do I think I'm going to find the data that's really helpful to that?
Right.
Because you're right, Roger, there are dozens of sources of data.
Mm-hmm.
We are, as the article points out, drowning in this data in many
right.
cases. So take the simpler approach. Don't try to solve 10 problems today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to solve one problem, or let's try to make some progress on
right.
one problem.
Yeah.
Knock out a win. Often that will help point you in the direction for the next problem,
mm-hmm.
and then go from there. But
yeah.
I think the biggest mistake people make is, one, just that feeling of being overwhelmed. I have so much data. It's like,
right.
I have 20 passwords. How can I remember them all? Okay. Well, let's focus on the most important problems. Let's look for the data sources that are going to be most helpful. Let's bring in the stakeholders
mm-hmm.
who are going to be most affected by
right.
this. And let's make sure that we are involving everybody who's got a stake in this. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of times, the slot department may think, well, this is a slot issue.
Right.
But it's going to implicate marketing. It's
right.
going to implicate your folks on the floor. It might implicate table games as well. So have as many heads in the room as you can
mm-hmm.
that do have a stake in the outcome, because that's how you'll get better questions to get asked, and you will avoid the groupthink that I think we often fall into,
sure.
where you have four people in the room, but they all kind of think the same, and they say, well, yeah, this is what we want to do, and they just go marching off, but it's
right.
in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
So keep it simple,
right.
focus, but make sure that you've got a diverse group of people that are
mm-hmm.
asking the right questions and then
right.
agreeing on what the approach should be.
Okay, great. So you just mentioned table games. We've been talking about slots here, but table games are becoming a bigger play in almost all casinos. So are there applications of this data science to table games as well?
I think there are. The biggest disconnect between table games and slots is that we just don't have as good data
mm-hmm.
from table games. A number of companies over the years, and they're getting better at it,
mm-hmm.
have been trying to approximate the slot machine. Because what
right.
we have on the slot machine is we understand very accurately exactly how much a customer wagered,
sure, right.
what happened when mm-hmm. from the time they put their card until the time they took their card out. We really don't have that from the table game
mm-hmm.
side, and there have been a lot of technological challenges, whether it's having a reader that can understand how much the customer bet. There
right.
have always been ways for customers to sort of fool the system, which
mm-hmm.
you really can't do on the slot
sure.
on the slot side. So what I would say is don't wait for the technological solution to arrive, because
right.
the cavalry is not coming.
Yeah.
Or if it does, it might be 5 years away.
It's been 20 years since I've been covering it. It hasn't arrived.
I still remember sitting in our lab with Jeffrey Kowalczyk at Harrah's
right.
10 years ago trying to figure out, why it was reading $100 chips as $10
right.
chips, and how could you prevent the antenna from getting knocked off,
right.
When somebody got mad and banged the table. So there are those challenges, and they continue to exist. So what can you do with the data you've already got? Okay. One, let's make sure it's accurate, and there are a number of solutions that are out there, technological solutions that'll help. But again, you need to have the horsepower. You need
sure.
to have people inside your organization
mm-hmm.
that are ready, willing, and able to take that data and actually help you turn it into actionable solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So my first advice would be, whether it's you're hiring them internally or you're going to look for a consultant
mm-hmm.
outside, find somebody who actually understands analytics.
Right.
You have to have that capability,
mm-hmm.
right? If I need somebody to hit home runs, I got to have somebody that knows how to hit, that's a power hitter. Don't
right.
get me a closer to
right.
hit,
yeah.
hit my home runs for me. So find the people with the skills and with the experience. And then go back to the drawing board on what are the questions I'm trying to answer? Am I trying to understand whether I'm comping people accurately? Because
right.
the biggest thing I see in table games we hear constantly is customers complain they're not being tracked accurately.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the data, we're actually over-comping our
right.
customers.
Right.
So But the beauty of the relationship with a customer is if you actually can sit down and explain to them and show them the facts, mm-hmm. most of them will come around. We used to have people who say, I've been sitting here for 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Waiting for somebody to pay my jackpot. Well, 10 minutes often was 90 seconds, right?
Yeah.
And if the right person with the right approach to the customer could say, well, you know, you rang your button and somebody actually got here. I know it sort of feels like 10 minutes,
right.
but we're doing the best we can. Same thing on the table games. You show somebody what their average bet really is and what they're receiving. They're usually very receptive to that.
Right.
So actually having a real answer for people, they appreciate that.
Yeah.
And they appreciate that you took the time
mm-hmm.
to go chase it down for them, chase down the answer, and then deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the short answer is you need the people with the skills and the experience, and let's make sure we know the questions we're trying to answer and do it the best we can. You don't have to be 100%.
Right.
Being 75 or 80% is better than being 0%.
Mm-hmm.
So don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good when it comes to answering these very critical questions.
Okay, great. So is there a technology out there that can help casino operators better interpret the data they collect?
I think the answer generally is yes. There's lots and lots of products mm-hmm. that promise to do that. I think most operators can leverage their own data internally mm-hmm. with the right resources. And a lot of times it's mm-hmm. it's sort of staring you in the face.
Yeah.
What I found to be a very, very powerful tool is instead of looking at the high level after results of a marketing program or monthly results of how our slot machines did,
mm-hmm.
Both from a machine standpoint and what our segments are, is the individual rating data.
Right.
Which it's scary because there's a lot of it. So if you think about every day, instead of looking at what a slot machine did on a particular day, any given slot machine had hundreds of interactions with the customer,
mm-hmm.
individual ratings.
Right.
When you start to look at those individual ratings, and you can look at it from a machine standpoint and the customer standpoint, that's when you really, really start to see some patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So in some of the things that I've looked at, when we look at our most valuable customers, there are successful games with high win per units that these people avoid like the plague.
Right.
And I'd really like to know that as an operator. And
yeah.
I'm not really going to know that just by looking at my monthly slot reports.
Sure,
there's
right.
no way to do that.
Right.
When you can look at the individual ratings, and there are literally tens of millions of these, so it's not something you can just dump
right.
into an Excel spreadsheet. This is where you need some help. This is where you need some expertise. But
mm-hmm.
I don't need to buy a technological solution for that.
Right.
I don't need to spend millions of dollars on a CRM solution
mm-hmm.
or a big data analytics solution. One or two internal resources
mm-hmm.
Looking at that data and just with some pretty basic technological tools, you can get some really good insights into your customers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can really start to understand for these, we love all of our customers, but
right.
at the end of the day, there's probably 15 to 20% that we're really, really going to focus on.
Sure, right.
And that's where we can start to answer those valuable questions about how do I really make their experience what I want it to be so we can drive
mm-hmm.
Greater visitation, more spend, more loyalty. The second thing is if you really want to jump in, is data science offers tremendous possibilities for answering some of these really big meta questions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we found at one of our casinos was that there are certain games that new customers just should not play.
Right.
Like we found there were about 10 or 12 games that if a new customer, so the new card sign up, those are very easy to identify, those
mm-hmm.
customers are, if they played one of these games on their first trip, they were highly unlikely to ever come back again.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were some other games that it was exactly the opposite if they
right.
played those games. So wouldn't it be great to know what those games are
sure.
and why?
Mm-hmm.
And we were just starting to understand that when I left. So that's but every casino has got that dilemma of how do I drive that second trip and then how do I drive that third trip?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I make sure that experience is terrific? And to be able to know what games they should be playing and shouldn't be playing,
mm-hmm.
incredibly powerful tool.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, Roger, nobody's doing that right now.
Right. Yeah.
And that's just because we're taking a very thick meat cleaver to the problem when we need to be, with a
right.
deli slicer, frankly.
Sure. Right.
But the data's right there. We as operators own that data.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of having the right people to help advise you or internally to
mm-hmm.
for you to hire them so that they can actually do that.
Sure. But it sounds like, the casinos and your manufacturers need to cooperate in a greater opportunity here in terms of analyzing this data, because it's to the manufacturers' benefit to know what games work best as well as the operators.
Absolutely. So that's we've talked about you know, internally, what can we do? But then it's a the business is not just the right. casino operators and their customers. Sure. They're playing on those devices that the manufacturers mm-hmm. make. The manufacturers do the best they can, but their focus. And I've talked to some of the best game designers out there running, you know, very large organizations. And if you ask them, so how do you decide what games you want to make?
Right.
They don't say, well, you know, they're for the millennial customer, right? Yeah. For the millennial sure. males right. who really like this, this is what we're coming out with. What right. they'll say is, well, we've noticed that, you know, competitor X seems a little short in 50-line, right. you know, penny games, so we're going to try to make more of those. They're right. they're focused very much on their competitors and trying to figure mm-hmm. out how they can outmaneuver the competitors than actually thinking about the customers. And at right. the end of the day, we live or die based on what kind of experience do we create for our customers.
Sure, right.
People that are walking in the door. And the casino business is doing well. It's growing again finally after years of mm-hmm. you know, relatively mild decline. But we compete against a lot of other mm-hmm. entertainment right. options. And we need to be as compelling as we can so that people are coming to the casino instead of going to the bowling alley
sure.
or going to the movies or right. you know going out to watch somebody play golf. Mm-hmm. We want to maximize the time that they're spending in our facilities. And to do that, we need to create a great experience, whether it's having the right product, helping them find that product, helping them understand what games will work for them. And then, of course, having a great overall experience when they're within our walls.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, David, it's been great to talk to you. Some really provocative ideas here. I like them. Hope you can write for us again. I really enjoyed this article. And I think anybody who's listening now need to pick up an October issue and read the article because it really is eye-opening for sure.
Thank you, Roger. It's great spending time.
Thanks for the time.
You enjoyed this episode of the GGB podcast brought to you by Questback. To learn more about the services provided by this company, visit questback.com. To read more about data analytics and how to use it, read David Patton's article in the October issue or visit ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on all the news of the gaming industry, visit ggbnews.com. And to find the best bonuses and promotions for iGaming and how to attract more players to your legal iGaming site or sports betting site, visit iGamingPlayer.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz and on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. That's it for today, and we hope to see you next week on the GGB Podcast.